Hi, this is Jenny Nash from Author Accelerator. You've heard me talk a lot about becoming a book coach because that's what Author Accelerator does. This month, I want to offer podcast listeners the chance to meet some of our awesome book coaches. For the month of March, I'm making available 25 free slots for listeners to be hand-matched with three book coaches. We look at what you're writing, what your publishing plans are, and what challenges you're having, and we match you with three coaches that we think would be a great fit to help you meet your writing goals. Our coaches run their own businesses and set their own packages and pricing. You can check them out to see if you like their services and their vibe. There's no obligation to work with any of these coaches. We just want to showcase how awesome they are, so we're offering this $50 matching service free of charge. This offer is only good for the month of March, and it's only good for the first 25 people who sign up. You can go to bookcoaches.com/matchme and use the code MATCHME. Once again, that's bookcoaches.com/matchme, and the secret code is MATCHME.
Is it recording?
Now it's recording.
Yay!
Go ahead.
This is the part where I stare blankly at the microphone, try to remember what I'm supposed to be doing.
All right, let's start over.
Awkward pause.
I'm going to wrestle some papers.
Okay.
Now 1, 2, 3. Okay.
Jess Leahy, and this is Hashtag Am Writing, the podcast about writing all the things. Writing the short things, the long things, the proposals, the novels, the poetry, the screenplays. This is about marketing. This is about publicity. This is about all the stuff you have to do as a writer. But more than anything else, this is the podcast about getting the work done. It's just me this week. Everyone else has obligations this week. So I get to give you, I had a really busy week. And so I get to share with you a lot of things that I learned this week. This is Jess Leahy. I am the author of the New York Times bestselling The Gift of Failure and The Addiction Inoculation. And I used to write for the New York Times and the Atlantic and the Washington Post. And you can find my work still sitting around at any of those places, mostly about education and parenting and child welfare and all things, I don't know, making the world a better place for kids, I guess. So, we are here today to do a big catch-up episode because I've been keeping a notebook full of all of the things I've been learning. I was on a panel for the Institute for Independent Journalists, and I want to share some of the things I learned there about monetizing your platform. It was enlightening, and I met some writers who are killing it out there, and I just wanted to share a little bit of that with you. I want to talk about a coaching call I just did recently. I want to talk about a few things I learned from taking a phone call with a company that I was going to hit delete on the email based on their pitch. But then I said, you know, there's an opportunity to learn some things here. And so I decided to take that phone call and I took notes on that for you and just a few other tidbits that came up this week. Okay, let's start first with that phone call. As anyone who gets pitches often knows that it's really easy to just hit delete, 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 because a lot of people will pitch, a lot of PR agents or, you know, companies will pitch these really vague pitches. I get a lot of stuff, for example, for this podcast, asking us to interview, you know, a particular author or asking if I'd like to read those books, which is great because that's how we sort of figure out who we're going to have on the show. But I often get these rando pitches for all kinds of stuff. Like every once in a while, I get one saying, hi, I understand that you write about the costs of construction in modern America, which I do not write about that. But once your email gets into a big database for publicity, you get all kinds of stuff. So anytime someone has actually gone out of their way to do research on me and find out what I really do and talk about, for example, items that really resonated with them, my finger pauses above delete because I'm like, this is someone who actually knows what I do and is interested in connecting on whether that's an author, a product, an idea, whatever. I'm more likely to hover above the delete key and not hit it. So this, I want to use this information because if you are doing your own publicity, as I do, and you want to reach people and have them actually open your email, whether that's your email newsletter and you want your open rate to be better, or whether you're sending out a pitch, it's best that you show you've put in the work. It's actually a little insulting to get emails from people who, you know, say, I understand you write about, you know, the cost of modern construction, because not only is it wasting my time, it makes me pause and say, oh man, this person really doesn't know what they're doing. And sometimes those people or that agency will actually catch in my head as a place that doesn't know what they're doing. Okay. So make it as personal as possible without being stalky, and, you know, just catch their attention by not just... In fact, oh, here's another thing that happened I meant to share with you. I got a pitch from someone. It wasn't really a pitch. It was actually a personal communication. But it was very clear that they had cut and pasted the email, because what had happened was they had started the email in the email font, and then they had this piece of email that they didn't want to have to write over and over and over again about who they are and what they do. Totally reasonable. I do that all the time. But they didn't bother to match fonts. So they pasted this thing in. It was a totally different font. It was different spacing. So it was pretty clear that this email was a cut and paste job. So I ignored it until I got a backup. I got a reminder email saying, just want to bring this to the top of your inbox, that kind of thing. And I realized that this was from an actual human who had been introduced to me through someone that we both knew, and something that I needed to pay attention to. But note that I went ahead and deleted it because it was pretty clear that it was a cut and paste job. Ditto if you don't bother to put a person's name in, if you get the person's name wrong, all that kind of stuff. So anyway, little lesson on sending out emails when you do have to cut and paste information. Anyway, so I took this email and I replied to the person who emailed me. But I didn't just reply to the person who emailed me and said what they were asking about was, they said, we've looked at your work and we run, I work for an agency that helps writers increase their platform, you know, go from maybe one level up to the next level, whether that's in their speaking or just their existence out there in the media. And here are some examples of people we've worked with. And I want to keep this really anonymous. I don't want to ding this company. I have no beef with them. I just took this call and I learned a lot from it. So I'm actually a little bit indebted to them for the learning opportunity, but I definitely don't want to identify this company. So essentially, they're a marketing company, a platforming company, and branding in some sense. So what do all these terms mean? We did an interview a long time ago with Carol Bleymeyer, who teaches personal branding at Georgetown University, actually. And that's a great episode for you to go look at if you want a deep dive on branding, personal branding, and marketing. We're going to talk a lot about branding and marketing and publicity. So I want to, we'll define our terms a little bit. I was also on a call this week with someone who really knows what they're doing, who's in marketing on a professional level. That's all they do. And this person said, you know, marketing is all of the stuff that you invest in, that you pay for in order to make, whether that's in time or money, excuse me, I have a cold today, whether that's in time or money, money that you invest in order to, you know, whether that's to have postcards and bookmarks to go along with your book, whether that's in hiring a publicist, whether that's in getting your headshots done and revamping your website and all that sort of stuff. That's all marketing. Publicity is the stuff that you get when people come to you and say, we'd like to interview you, or someone talks about you on a news show, that kind of thing. It's a very narrow definition, but that's sort of what we're talking about. All right. Now that we've defined our terms, let's get into it. So this company claims that they do personal branding, they do marketing, they do publicity. I have worked with an advertising agency in the past that was looking at, it was for a nonprofit that I worked with, and they were looking at figuring out exactly who we are, what we did, what the elevator pitch is for this nonprofit, how they can best advertise for us, given what we do, given what we understand we do, and given what we want people to understand that we do. So we had these great meetings where we would sit there and brainstorm about who we are, what we do, what we want to be known for, what we want people to think of when they think of us. And that's actually pretty similar to what this company wanted to do. So essentially what they wanted to do was meet with me, talk about what I do, talk about how I do it, present Jess Leahy to the world in a certain way and sort of elevate my brand. And whether that means they're elevating my brand by changing up my website or figuring out better messaging for me. So, you know, I was thinking about that. I'm thinking, okay, great. You know, that can be really helpful. And they have clients that they have very successfully done this with. And they gave me a list of clients and I looked at all that sort of stuff. So did my research, in other words. So I knew the person I was talking to very specifically. And in researching the guy I was having the phone call with, I found out some very interesting things. I researched the company, obviously. I researched the founders. I looked to see what their presence was on social media. I looked to see sort of how they present themselves, right? Because I can't expect that a company will present me really well unless they present themselves really well. And one thing that was fascinating to me was the person who reached out and wanted to have the call was not listed as staff on their webpage. So fascinating, right? I filed that away so I emailed him and I said, I'm really curious as to why you're not listed as staff. It looks like your email is legit and tied to this company, but you're not on their website. And the person said, our website's just out of date. And I said, okay, well, that's interesting. And our call wasn't until a week later. So I waited. And the following week before our call, I checked their website again to see if this person was listed on their website, and they were not. And neither were some other people that seemed to work there. And so when we had the call, one of my first questions to this person was, how on earth, I'm really interested to hear what you do. I'm fascinated by what you do and how you do it, and I'd like to learn about it. But how can I expect that you can represent me in a meaningful way, in a way that puts my best foot forward when your entire staff is not even on your website, that you can't keep your own website up to date? So that was my first warning sign about this company. And the second was when the person who took the call said essentially, well, we're not hurting for business, so we're not that worried about it. So, okay, I mean, I'm done at this point, but it's still a really interesting opportunity to learn, right? So I have this person who's pitching me his company. And what I'm really interested in is how they elevate people's platform and how they get paid for it. Like, where's the revenue coming from? So it turns out what this company does is they do exactly what I mentioned about this advertising agency that I had worked with a nonprofit one time. We have extensive meetings where we distill down who I am, what I do, maybe come up with catchphrases, come up with ways to really convey who I am in a really succinct way to a lot of people. And, you know, they can do all kinds of things too. They can work on my social media strategy. They have website people in-house. They have social media people in-house. They have all that kind of stuff. So up front, it's a retainer. So let's say, hypothetically, it's $10,000 to even have that first phone call. So, and which is, you know, sort of the low end of the range, but there we are. So they have all that. And then what they help you do is come up with passive, well, not necessarily passive, but income streams moving forward. So what am I going to do with this brand that they can charge 20% for, which is their percentage, moving forward in whether that's courses, whether that's some sort of product that can be marketed and they can take part of the income on that, as I mentioned, 20%. So this wasn't something I was particularly interested in, but that's what this company does. So if you end up talking to someone who claims that they can elevate your platform, help you with marketing, help you with publicity. And as I mentioned, this company has really done a great job with some of the people that they've worked with. The one person that I knew tangentially that I was going to talk to about this company, if I was interested, whom I didn't end up talking to, is no longer with this company. Essentially, this person needed the company at first, got the platform going, and now has decided they can maintain it themselves. There are people still with this company who are clearly making money for this company. So that was fascinating to me. So it looks like it's retainer while you're sort of doing the learning process, and then obviously doing the 20% cut after the fact with some sort of marketable product. I said, what happens if I want to do the whole branding part, the upfront $10,000 minimum thing, and not necessarily do the marketable product? And the guy on the phone was like, yeah, we're not a huge fan of that. Of course they're not, because you know, they want to make passive income off of me going forward. You know, that wouldn't be ideal, essentially, was his message. And we both had a laugh over it. And I said at the end, you know, I just want to mention again that, you know, the website has not been updated, even after I have brought attention to the fact that it's out of date. And just want to mention, you know, that if moving forward, if you want to impress people with your ability to put a great foot forward, not just for yourself, but for your clients, you might want to update that. And they weren't really interested in that information. So anyway, That's what that company does. That's an option. You know, you can hire. We've talked before in other episodes about hiring publicists. I have. Go look for the episodes on that. I found it, for me anyway, it was helpful. It depends on the publicist that you hire. Again, there are branding companies, and there's soup to nuts branding companies too, and I've talked to them as well. People who do the exact same thing, but then are really invested in and get paid for creating your website and creating your social media and maintaining all of that, and do rebranding for big companies as well. So there's all kinds of angles to come at this, from the rebranding to the marketing to the publicity, and I just found it fascinating and wanted to flatten the learning curve for you. So if you get approached by a company that claims to do platforming, that's what they mean, or at least some iteration of that. All right. After that, I also did a really wonderful panel. I was so excited about it, for the Institute for Independent Journalists. This is an organization. It's theiij.com online. And this is about working with, this is a nonprofit that they like to work with journalists who are marginalized in some way, either because of what they write about, who they are, how they identify, and they're attempting to really lift up and instruct these journalists on how to do this. Happened to be about freelancing, this particular conference, and it was great. I highly recommend you go to the IIJ.com and sign up for their for updates, because these conferences are really useful and affordable. Okay, so I was on a platform about getting paid for your work, but in a way, you know, rather than just freelancing and getting the $150 here or the $400 there, what else can you do? So the people on this panel were mostly writing email newsletters, and they were amazing. Ahead of the panel, I went and read and subscribed to actually a bunch of their email newsletters. The people on this panel were in various stages of getting started, and they're just killing it. Their work is really, really good. And I'm going to put them in the show notes with links to all of their newsletters, websites, that kind of thing. So definitely go to #amwriting.substack.com so that you can find the show notes for this episode and get all of their information. I have now subscribed to two or three of them. And specifically for our audience, Tim Herrera. He has a Freelancing with Tim Substack, and he's a delight. And there's a lot of work there that seems like it could be really helpful for many of the people in our audience. But there I learned about creating newsletters, about, you know, how you want to set that up. Do you want to have all of your, how do you want to get started, first of all? And we talked about a lot of different platforms. Substack is the one that most people are on now, mainly because it's well known right now. Substack has some problematic issues with who they platform. There's some white supremacy issues going on with Substack. There aren't a lot of great choices right now, so a lot of people are going with Substack, even though there are problems with Substack. And moving once you've gotten sort of a platform at one place can be challenging. So there's a lot of sacrificing, give and take around who you choose and whether or not you choose to stay with them. You know, I don't know that there's a platform out there for newsletters that is not at all problematic, but we'll see. It's an evolving area. And lots of people have newsletters now. I subscribe to them. I support a lot of writers, actually, mainly because I want to support writers that I love. I want them to be able to make a living doing the work that they love. And often Substack has, for example, one of the writers who I decided to subscribe to is Frankie de la Critaz, and they have a really interesting newsletter that's at the intersection of gender studies and Taylor Swift and politics and sports, and it's fantastic. I love their newsletter and honored to subscribe. Go over to Substack. The fun thing about Substack also is when you subscribe to someone, or if you start reading someone, it'll start suggesting other writers to you. And that's also been a fascinating place. I also follow, for example, Condiment Claire. This woman, Claire, writes about, she's big on TikTok. I happen to love her stuff because she writes about food. She writes about condiments, and I'm all in. So I subscribe to Condiment Claire. She just had a wonderful newsletter on goat cheese. So yay, goat cheese. That was great too. All right. How do you decide? You can start out doing Substack completely for free. As you know, our podcast is hosted at Substack. We have an entire podcast episode with Liz Lenz where we first learned about Substack. You can go all in for free there. You can choose to start charging for some things. Most of the people on this panel agreed that you start out trying to build a platform on Substack, build your audience on Substack by offering things for free. And when you get to a place where you have maybe 100 subscribers, then start saying, look, I have some subscribers here who might be interested in getting more from me by paying, by supporting me. And again, like with the pitching question we talked about earlier, I think personal is better. If you have, for example, Frankie's podcast or Frankie's newsletter, they have a very specific niche. I like that specific niche. I like that I'm getting to know this person through their very specific niche. So a relationship sort of gets formed there. So it would behoove Frankie to come to me in a personal sort of way and say, hey, you dig what I do? Would you like to support me in this work so that I can spend more of my time giving you more of what you might want? And here are ways that you can subscribe. And I think the personal approach there is really great, especially when you're first starting out and you don't have a lot of people following you at Substack. Or even, like I said, subscribing to you at Substack, the personal touch I find works really, really well. Do you want to learn more? For example, I'm trying to figure out how I want to do this. I have a Substack. I haven't put up any Substack specific stuff, mainly because I have a blog over on my website. Weighing also, do I want to send people over to Substack, even if I'm getting paid for it, versus keeping people at my website and redirecting traffic back into my website? That's a trade-off as well. Do you want to send more people over to Substack, or would you like to retain them? It's not difficult to upload your email list from your, for example, I'm at Squarespace, from my Squarespace website to Substack. And because that audience has already opted in to my newsletter and Substack is still my newsletter, it's completely kosher for me to import that list over to Substack so that I can have my email list living over there as well. The question is, am I going to stick with that? What am I going to do when I start paying for some and people start paying for some and managing what people pay for? It's a bigger commitment is all I'm saying. And it's a trade-off. Again, sending people away from my website, maybe I want to do that, maybe I don't. And I'm still weighing all of that. But the people on the panel also said another great way to get started with paid stuff is to give them the extra, to put out your best stuff, your most well-researched stuff, and at least initially, for free. Because, of course, you want to entice in new subscribers, new listeners, so that they may eventually become subscribers and might eventually pay you for your content. You don't want to, you know, especially when you first get started, reserve your best stuff for 10 people only, your subscribers, your paid subscribers, and then leave the other 3,000 people or however many people are on your email list only getting, you know, the bonus materials. So give everybody your best stuff and hope that you can then entice people and say, you know what, I'm also working on this article about, let's go with Condiment Claire. Let's say she's working on an extra recipe, making a jam that she thinks that people might like based on what's in season right now. And that's the extra thing, but that big piece on goat cheese that might be, you know, the most well-researched thing she did that she put most of her effort in, maybe that's the free piece that you put on top. That's up to you, but the people on the panel really agreed that that seems to be what works best, that you're cultivating constantly trying to lure in new people with your really quality content and then to get people to agree to pay for extras on top of that. Some people actually agreed to do other stuff, not just more writing or more videos or more podcast content, but one-on-one time. I know of people who cultivate entire communities, for example, and she doesn't do this on Substack, but my friend Debbie Reber, she has a website called Tilt Parenting, and it's for parenting neurodivergent kids. And it's fantastic. It's wonderful. And she cultivates a community there where she gives people extra time. She gives you the option to log on with her, I believe it's once a month, and she interviews experts in various areas. She gives you, you know, one-on-one time. She agrees, and other people do things like agree to answer a personal email once a month with something very specific to your parenting dilemma or whatever that thing might be. Extra access is a great way to get people to subscribe because that's really valuable, right? I try to answer one listener or audience member email every single day, and I'm way behind. So I have emails from people from 6 months ago that I had to just send an auto reply and say, I'm really sorry, I'm way behind on emails, even though I'm answering one a day, and I'm hoping I'll get to yours soon. That would be a great opportunity for me to also include in that email, if you're interested, I also have this community, which I don't. Don't go there and try to subscribe. I don't have this yet. I may eventually. But it would be a great opportunity in that auto reply to say, you know, thank you so much for submitting your question. I get a lot of questions. I can't get to all of them in a timely fashion. But I do have this community of subscribers over here. And if you really wanted to make sure that your questions get answered or that you get to do a Zoom with me once a month as part of the community, and maybe a smaller community works on a book group together, or I'm going to interview other experts on this specific question, that would be a great place to advertise that and to get more subscribers over to your Substack. Just putting that out there. One of the other things you have to remember is that if people are going to pay to subscribe to your content, they're subscribing to you, to your particular content. So writing to your audience, we talk about this all the time, writing to the people who are out there is great. Keeping in mind also that you have to balance that with trying to pull new people in all of the time and doing what I talk about, that rebranding, remarketing, reimagining your audience all the time. So having a Substack where people are paying for your content, you have to constantly balance the people who are paying because they love what you do here that you're already doing. So if you decide to pivot completely, remember that you are also, there's a certain obligation to the audience who paid to be there in the first place. And remembering that and keeping that personal connection with your audience so that you can either allow them to opt into this new content or discuss it with them and say, look, I'm going to be writing on this new topic. And here's this email that you guys have access to because you're my subscribing audience. Tell me what it is you want. It gives you all kinds of really cool options when you have people who are subscribing to your content. As Liz Lentz said, when we interviewed her at first about Substack and we first got talking about Substack, she said for her Substack, and this was a long time ago, can mean the difference between making her rent 1 month and not making her rent 1 month. And having that base of people who are paying to opt in for your specific information, for your writing, and I'm still a proud subscriber to Liz Lentz's newsletter because it's fantastic. The quality of her writing is incredible. And she has a known source of income so that if she doesn't get the freelancing gigs or she doesn't have a book in progress, she has a place to go to say, okay, I know that I have that income stream coming in every month. And you also have to decide how much you're going to charge for your content. And that's completely up to you. And it appears that there are lots of people out there and freelancing with Tim Herrera is again another place where he talks about some of this. Figuring out what you're worth and what your content is worth is a big part of this equation. So some of the resources we've talked about today, if you are part of a marginalized community, if you are genderqueer, if you are writing about topics that are appeal to a genderqueer, marginalized, there's all kinds of people that fit into this category. The IIJ.com, the Institute for Independent Journalists, could be a great place for you. It is a wonderful, wonderful resource. Again, freelancing with Tim Herrera on Substack. He might be a great place for you to go. And I hope that some of what I learned this week has flattened your learning curve. I know it did for me. Even if that time that I invested in having that phone call isn't going to go anywhere and wasn't for me, it still was a learning opportunity. And so, I'm going to grab onto as many of those as I can and then share the information here. Because as you know, when we started the hashtag AmWriting podcast, we said that was one of our goals, was to flatten your learning curve, to spend the time learning about things so that you don't have to. There's a bunch of cool things coming up right now in publishing that have been in the news this week in publishing that we hope to do some future episodes on. So there's going to be some shakeups this for coming year in publishing, and I think it's going to be fascinating to watch. I want to take one moment to do a hashtag AmReading. We don't always have time for this, but I wanted to do one this week. By the time this podcast comes out, this book should be out. I just listened to an advanced copy of James. The book James is a follow-up to Huckleberry Finn, but from Jim's perspective. I cannot begin to tell you how excited I was about this book, not only because, first of all, on TikTok, I was seeing a lot of booksellers who had gotten advanced copies of this book and were raving about it and saying, you know, this is really going to change the way people look at Huckleberry Finn. By the way, Percival Everett is the author of this book, James by Percival Everett. I'm not sure of the release date. I'm going to have to look it up, but it's in March. It's in the middle of March. And so I was really looking forward to this book, and I got an advanced listening copy from Libro FM. Thank you so much, Libro FM. It's fantastic to have the opportunity to listen to these books ahead of time. So many people, we often get advanced copies of books, but as an audiobook listener, I particularly cherish the early listening versions. James by Percival Everett is... it's massive. It's going to get a lot of awards, I believe. It retells, as I said, Huckleberry Finn from Jim's perspective. This is an area that has been ripe for the picking. I've been hoping someone would do this. I'm a huge fan of these books that retell classic stories from another perspective. The Other Bennett Sister was one that I loved as well, about Mary Bennett. That was really, really fun because she's, you know, the bookish one. She's the one we don't hear from as much. And I was interested in her story. And I was very interested in Jim's story. There are layers to the story. I will do no spoilers, obviously, in this podcast. But I highly recommend it. James by Percival Everett is going to be a big, big book. And it deserves to be a big, big book. It's really good. I'm still thinking about it. It's really good. I'm probably going to listen a second time. And I'm probably going to go back and read Huckleberry Finn again for like the bajillionth time because I used to teach this book in American literature. I so wish I had James to teach alongside the Adventures of Huckleberry Finn. It would have been a very different experience for my students and especially for my African-American students. Well, for everybody, but especially for my African-American students. And there are a lot of things I wish I could go back and do differently about teaching Huckleberry Finn, especially in light of this book. Can't go back, can only go forward. So anyway, to my former students, I love you and I wish I had been wiser and I wish this book had existed. So anyway, thanks again for listening to this week. There's so much cool stuff coming up on the Hashtag I'm Writing podcast. We have some interviews coming up, including a repeat interview with AJ Jacobs, who has a new book coming out in May about living constitutionally. And I cannot wait for you to listen to that podcast because, again, AJ Jacobs, one of my favorite interviews. But until then, until next week, keep your butt in the chair and your head in the game. The Hashtag Am Writing podcast is produced by Andrew Perella. Our intro music, aptly titled Unemployed Monday, was written and played by Max Cohen. Andrew and Max were paid for their time and their creative output because everyone deserves to be paid for their work. Pause. Stop. Stop. Thank you.